right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are now switching our focus exclusively to the energy sector, mostly oil and natural gas, as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter. Joseph is the founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. That's where Joseph dives into individual companies, sets out what he thinks investors should be doing in terms of where some of the best opportunities in the stocks are, more on the investment landscape. He also writes the Eye on Energy Report, which is a free report that covers the macro, the fundamentals within the oil and natural gas sectors. So as we always do, we'll start off with the pricing environment of oil and natural gas and get into some of the questions we've received on the stocks underlying those commodities. So Joseph, great having you back on the show. Let's talk energy, because energy prices broadly lower. Oil, as we are recording this Wednesday, halfway through the day on Wednesday, crude's having a rough day. It is down to about $58 a barrel. Look, these numbers in the 50s, even though it's high 50s, these are prices that we haven't seen since early 2021. And it has broken a trading range that oil has been in really ever since 2023, a multi-year trading range. I realize there's a lot of push and pull factors here, but Joseph, we do need to address the fact that with this breakdown, is the sector in some sort of threat here of simply continuing this downtrend?
Well, let's go through, the fundamentals first. The market's concerned that OPEC is going to raise production by 431,000 BOEs a day or barrels a day in May. And that comes during a soft period with, of course, recession, concerns in the States, Canada, China, Europe is there. And so too much volume is driving part of the reason you're seeing lower commodity prices. The other thing is you're seeing the issue of, Iran, Venezuela on the positive side, where if Iran doesn't sign a deal on the nuclear side, they could have sanctions that would remove in Q4 1.5 million. Venezuela has until May 27th before U.S. sanctions kick in. They were producing over 900,000 BOEs a day. Then when sanctions kick in Q3, they'll lose half of their volumes. So I'm in the bull camp that by fourth quarter, we're going to be $80 oil. My concern in the near term has been that we're in the shoulder season. Inventories build now. You had the OPEC announcement, and fear has taken over. Are we going to have an oversupply in the month of April and May, especially if the 431 comes on? Yes. Get into July and the summer driving season, and everything tightens up, and demand is greater than supply. And then once those sanctions kick in on Venezuela and Iran, then all of a sudden the game goes in favor of the bulls. So today we're at $58, as you mentioned. When the price got up to 64, 65, I said that we're going to back off. In April, we got down to $55 on a spike downward. We recovered afterwards. I think we're going to test the lows. I don't think we go much below them, if we go below them. But I think the decline is going to be coincidental with weaker general stock markets, which is what you're seeing today. And I think the Dow, which is about 40,000, could go down to 35,000. The NASDAQ, which is around 19,000, could go down to 13,000. So there's quite a bit of downside. 17,184. I think it's going to 13,000. I'm just looking at the numbers fresh in front of me. And so I think that there's downside during the month of May. If the trade deals don't go well, everybody's optimistic that there's going to be good trade deals. Everything takes time. You may have a outline of a deal, but until you do the paperwork and get everything implemented, I think people will realize it's not going to be good. The Port of California is saying that the number of ships coming over to unload is about 30% below normal. We're already hearing from stores that in June, you'll be paying more for the goods that are coming in now that are going to have the tariffs on them. There's been some acquiescence by Trump on the autos if the cars are finished in the U.S., but that's still going to mean higher prices because the tariffs are there, but then you get a credit if you finish the cars in the States. So we don't know until June the day-to-day impact on consumers, And I think people are restraining themselves from spending now on discretionary items. Even Starbucks this morning announced weaker revenues, weaker earnings, and the stock's down 8%. So we're looking at a market here that's nervous. And if we continue, this is a big week for earnings. If those earnings are weak and the rest of the earnings for the Q1 are not favorable, which they don't seem to be, and most companies are not prepared to give forward guidance because they just don't know, that uncertainty, I think, causes a market pullback during May. I'd also point out that we've got more geopolitical tensions out there. We've got the issue of India and Pakistan now, which is new and an ugly one. Second, the Russians have defeated the Ukrainians that invaded Kursk, so they've pushed them out. So the question is, what happens now on the negotiations, and are they going to be tougher because Russia controls all of its land again? And then, of course, we have the issue with Iran. If they don't do a nuclear deal, Trump has said they would lead the attack. So I think, and then, of course, you've got China with Taiwan, which has been more aggressive by China. So I think there's some geopolitical event that potentially with weaker earnings, tariff concerns are going to drive the general stock markets lower. It's going to be a great buying opportunity when we get to those lower levels. And I've mentioned 34,000, 35,000 on the Dows, 13,000 on the NASDAQ, 215, 225 on the S&P TSX Energy Index, mid-50s on the price of crude. That will provide the next table-pounding buy for energy securities. We had one in early April, and we sent out a table-pounding buy with four new recommendations. I'm waiting to get the next buy window, and then we'll be sending out another buy window recommendation. And the one that's interesting, in early April, historically, when you get below 10% on the S&P Energy Bullish Percentage Index, it's a buy signal. Anytime you get below 5%, it's a table-pounding buy. In March of 2020, we got down to 3.7% bullishness. So that was low, and we all know how good stocks did after that. The only time we've had a 0% reading before April was in 2008, in the end of the year, when we saw two readings of zero. We got a 0% reading that lasted 3 days in early April, and we used that as a buying window. I think we're going to come back down below 10%, maybe even below 5% in the next few weeks, and we're going to use that as a buy window. Stocks are exceedingly cheap. We've got a lot of overhang of concern, the politics in Canada, low oil prices. But, you know, the solution for low oil prices is low oil prices and removing production. And if we remove Iran and we remove Venezuela, the bullish story comes together very quickly.
Well, Joseph, I was going to ask you about that low that was hit in April down at 55. So you think oil prices could pull back there, but in a backdrop where on the macro side, as you outlined, there's a lot of uncertainty. A lot of businesses saw a pull forward in sales from some of the reports I've been seeing, but they think that was people trying to get in front of the tariffs. What happens to the oil equities if the general stock markets are pulling back and we see a contraction in the economy because maybe people aren't using that discretionary spending, maybe people aren't going out and even driving as much this summer? We see travel and tourism down quite a bit, double digits. What could happen to the oil stocks when they're stuck in this tug of war between equities pulling back, a lower oil price, and a potential of a contracting economy?
Yeah, not all groups, you know, move at the same time. Oil's been down for a long time, you know, part of 2024, part of, you know, this year. And it's only since February that the tech sector has gotten wrecked. So I think that, you know, there's not as much damage left to go, mid-50s, let's say, for oil. The oil stocks down from, you know, I think today we're sitting with the S&P TSX Energy Oil Index is trading today at 237. I think it's going to go to 215 to 225, so just under another 10% downside. So 10 to 15% lower prices to get to those bargain levels, which I think will happen. And people should be loading up because you've got a lot of companies that have, even at today's prices, they've got good hedges in place. They can handle $50 WTI and still, because of the 1.37 exchange rate for the Canadian dollar, 72 cents, they can pay their capex, pay their dividends, and they have hedging in place to support that with cash flows. And I think we're going to see, you know, those stocks get taken up and bought, and many of them are yielding 8, 9, 10%. So, you know, compared to what you get in the bank, you're getting paid enough by these energy companies, and the upside is there, and they have a high beta to higher prices. So everybody's so gloomy. If you remember in Q1 of last year, when the price of oil was 85, everybody was saying, oh, it's going to 90 or 100. And I was seeing signs that there was slowdown in the States, slowdown in China. And I was saying, and you guys, you know, recall this, that I was saying we're going down below 70. And we did. And so now nobody's looking at the fact of what's going to happen with Iran and Venezuela. And you automatically remove 2 million barrels and the gig is on at higher prices.
Yeah, well, the big question being, is this a temporary drop in prices or are we in a lower pricing environment here? That, in terms of a longer term sense, that is the big question. It's just interesting to see. I find that the larger oil stocks are holding up better, at least those ETFs, compared to the smaller ones. So what that means, and even those larger energy stocks are holding up better than the drop we've seen in the oil price. And Joseph, we're going to get to dividends. We've had many questions on how stable these dividends are, but just a quick question on capital spends. You really went around the world there talking about supply. What are you hearing from companies in Canada and in the US in terms of if they're winding back some of their capital spends right now?
Well, first thing, technology has improved so much with longer reach wells, you know, doing multiple wells from pads. And, you know, so you're getting companies focusing on keeping production flat, using the, you know, free funds flow for dividends, NCIBs, normal course issuer bids, buying back their stock. And companies are continuing to do that, you know, with the Canadian dollar where it is. You know, even though companies may not grow in 2025, they're still going to be able to do things right for shareholders. So I'm optimistic that, you know, that we're going to see, you know, the stocks bottom in the next month or two, and that the upside between now and year end, if I'm right, that we see $80 oil by the end of the year because of this aggressive sanctions against Iran and in Venezuela, we could see many stocks on our list go up 50% or more. So it's just, to me, this is one of the most exciting times. You know, April was exciting. You know, 2020 was exciting. 2008 was exciting. But when everybody is fearful, that's when you should be greedy. I think that's the Warren Buffett. And when everybody's greedy, you should be fearful. And as I mentioned, Mark Bobbius is now 95% cash. So in the near term, I think we're going to see some ugly markets for the next month or so. And can the market drop 5,000 points in the Dow in a month? Sure. We know we've seen 1,000 point days, 2,000 point days, even 3,000 point days. So up or down. And so I think this is going to be quick and dirty and ugly. Margin calls are going to be aggressive. People, the big thing to me, why we haven't seen the final bottom is that the investors, individual investors, continue to buy the dips. Historically at market bottoms, the unsophisticated individual investor historically panics and throws out, barfs out their portfolios. And of course, the GameStop investors and people buying those, you know, high beta stocks, triple ETF leveraged stocks on oil and gold and, you know, the Bitcoin world, all of those, you know, that's where I think the decimation is going to be. And those people, because they've levered and it worked for a while, when it doesn't work, it's going to drive those investors away. And, you know, I've been cautioning for people who are using margin or leverage, get out of that, because if you want to be an investor 2 years from now or even 6 months from now, you better not be doing that because you're going to get potentially wiped out.
Yeah, great point, Joseph. A lot of those people using the triple leveraged long funds, if we do have a pullback in the markets, they're going to be upside down in a bad way. And like you say, it takes you out of the environment where you can deploy cash into the low pricing and make volatility your friend. Well, we talked a little bit about oil and some of the oil stocks as far as how they're set up and even still secure in a lower price environment. What about bringing nat gas into the equation, Joseph? Just because in the US it's still around 330, AECO prices in Canada still in the mid twos. Those are okay prices for companies. So if a company has a nice mix where they've got a balance between oil, natural gas liquids, and natural gas, is that a safer place for investors to be right now because they have the strength of the nat gas prices leveraging out the oil price weakness?
Well, if they have good hedges, I think that also makes a good difference. There are quite a few companies that did the right thing, taking advantage of the higher prices during the winter. And right now, if you want to hedge for 2026, you can hedge over $3 for the whole year, and winter hedging prices over $3.50. Well, if your input costs are a buck, that's a very good business. If you're a smaller producer and you don't have liquids, you may have a break even at $2. It's okay, but it's not really good for you. So it matters which companies, and that's where you really have to do the homework on the mix of product that they're doing, the strength of the balance sheet, how much hedging they do. And I think, when you take all of that into account, and if the company is paying you a dividend that's more than what you can get in the bank, all of those should be on your checklist when you decide which companies you want to buy. I'm going to have our quarterly webinar tomorrow night, Thursday evening, at 7 o'clock for 90 minutes. So if people want to join us, I'll be covering the macro side, what's going on in the market, why I believe we're going to have this near-term weakness in May, why I believe we're going to have a bottom in May, where I think the price of oil is going to go into the 2026. And also I'll be talking about individual names of where I see the best bargains are. We cover 37 companies, so we're going to be picking the best of the best from that. And people can just go to our website and sign up to be subscribers, and they can join that webcast.
All right, Joseph, unfortunately, this will be coming out on Saturday, but I will post a link to the Schachter Energy Report so people can sign up and see the replay of that webinar. Let's talk about the underlying stocks then, because as I said, the larger stocks, you look at something like XLE, yes, it had a bad week about 4 or 5 weeks ago, as everything did in the markets. But again, it's at these levels that are low for the last 52 weeks. But overall, still, we're not at like oil. We're not at levels from 2021. We're at levels from early 2024. The smaller energy stocks, those have struggled, like the IEO. Those aren't just seeing the same money flow. So are you seeing the same panic in the large cap stocks that you're seeing in the oil price? Or it's kind of looks like from the chart, people are not exactly bailing on the sector right now.
Well, let's take the crown jewel of Canada, CNQ. It's 39.16. It's down 3.4% today. You go to Suncor, it's down 2.5% today. Baytex, a smaller name that people like, down 3.8% today. Imperial Oil down 4.2% today. And yet the TSX Energy Index is only down, well, it's down 3% today. But you've got some big down days. Vermilion is down about 5% today. Surge down 4%. Precision Drilling down 4.5%. Obsidian down 4.1%.
Today is a pretty bad day, though. Hey, Joseph, as we're recording this, oil broadly is down 3.5%.
Yeah, well, you got $2 off the price of oil. That's what's going to happen. So what you want to do is pick the names you want to own, pick a price where you think it's a bargain level. And then when you get these big dumping down days, but not yet, sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks when the general stock market is getting whipped about, that's when you stick your bids in below the market. And I think you're going to be very happy 6 months from now if you have that sense of confidence on the companies and you nibble away on that weakness.
Well, Joseph, let's just say we get the pullback in oil to 55, and a lot of these stocks have pulled back. Not all stocks are going to respond in the same way. What stocks or what criteria, I guess I should ask, that are you looking for as far as the stocks that'll bounce back the most or have the most torque in a rebound? Is there certain factors and criteria that you're weighting heavier than others?
Yeah, I think the first thing is balance sheet. You want to have companies that have a decent balance sheet that don't have a lot of debt, so they're not focused on paying down debt right away, and that they could be even looking at M&A activity because they have a strong balance sheet and some of the weaker players may be willing to, the bid-ask spread on deals could tighten up. You know, we saw the Whitecap Veren deal is getting done. So there are deals that can be done, you know, at the right price, and those two are merging. So that's one thing. Second, for individual investors, you want some income along the way. So you want a company paying you at least a 4 or 5% dividend yield and has a free cash flow to pay it. Third, you want a company that has at least stable production, but maybe 3 to 5% growth, even in these uncertain times. And then you want companies that have a lot of land, a lot of upside, that in a much higher price environment can grow their volume significantly into the end of the decade. Also, you want one more, insider ownership. You want significant insider ownership because you want them to be there not as bureaucrats and high-paid bureaucrats, but as owners who want to see the stock do well for all shareholders, including themselves.
So, Joseph, as you mentioned, the income aspect, I know that you think these dividends are stable, especially if oil gets back up into the 80s or even into the mid-70s. But here and now, because there is that split, especially in these high dividend paying stocks, these 8, 9, 10% yields, there's that balance of the regular dividends and the special dividends. Let's say oil doesn't shoot back up into the mid-70s. Maybe it stays in the 60s. Who knows? Maybe it stays in the high 50s for a longer period than you think. What can investors do to look at the dividends here and understand that they could stay hopefully around these levels? I've just had a lot of emails of people saying that they're worried that these dividends are going to be cut, or people could say, oh, the share price dropped. Look at how much it's paying now. But again, the dividends might not be coming to the same extent that they are now.
Yeah, that's where I'm going to do my homework as Q1 2025 results come out. We had Whitecap come out last week, and you know, I see them being able to pay the dividend with the merger as well. So every company, as they report, I'll be checking to see, number one, you know, how much debt they have, how much money they have to be spending on interest payments, how much cash flow free cash flow they have after paying for CapEx and, you know, the day-to-day operating of the business, and if they have enough free cash flow in Q1 to not only pay the dividend, but have a low payout ratio on that dividend. Those would be the companies I'd be focused on. So a company that has less than a 30%, you know, in terms of the free cash flow is needed to pay the dividend, and the rest can be used to knock down debt, do NCIBs, grow the production, make acquisitions. Those are the companies I'd be looking at. If you're talking a company that's got 70, 80% of free funds flow paying the dividend, that's where I'd be, or more, then those are the ones I'd be worried about having to cut the dividend.
Just pulling on this thread a little bit longer, if a company does get into a more distressed situation where they have to make a call, cut the dividend, stop the share buybacks, pull back on growth, what do you think is the best strategy for a company to do? Should they just keep paying the dividend and cut back on growth, or should they cut back the dividend a little bit and keep some growth element there? Should they keep the share buybacks? How do you look at that decision a company may need to make, and what are you more attracted to?
Well, the first one would be is you stop growth. You just try to keep stable production. NCIB and the dividend is where the trade-off becomes. So how much free funds flow do you have? And is it a high payout ratio or a low payout ratio? If it's a low payout ratio, then you don't worry. If it's high payout ratio, then they've got to make the decision. Do they stop the stock buybacks or do they cut the dividend? That's up to the board of directors. And again, as I mentioned, the key to me would be watching that ratio. A high ratio means the board's going to have to make a very difficult decision. And those are the ones that you got to worry about.
All right, Joseph, I want to change the topic a little bit here and talk about the difference between Canadian producers and U.S. producers. A lot focused on the Canadian producers after the recent election result where Mark Carney was elected. The Liberal government has power. It's not a majority, but look, they don't even have a formal opposition in the House right now, as the Conservative leader did not garner his seat. So they do have, in a way, kind of free rein, it sounds like, until more or less the end of the year, and then who knows what happens. But Carney did make the comments that old trade agreements with the U.S. are done. A lot of the Canadian oil goes down into the U.S. And boy, oh boy, we just hear everything out of Trump. Some big tariffs, some no tariffs. It's a very confusing environment. How are the Canadian companies impacted in this new government in Canada, balanced out with Trump's wild nature?
Well, at this stage, I think that the politics of oil are different from the politics of the auto industry or aluminum or forest products. Those are going to be more challenging ones for the federal government in Canada. I think the energy industry has been lobbying the White House about the fact that the refiners in the Midwest and the refineries in the Gulf of America are not able to process oil outside of Canadian oil. And if you remove, lower production from Mexico of their heavies and you cut off and sanction Venezuela, you remove those volumes, it just means the Canadian story is better and better for it. So I think, and they also use our natural gas during the winter time. So I think that there's, the energy side is one of the ones that is going to be less contentious, because even though Trump says, I don't need your oil and gas, I don't think he's been listening to his energy minister and his interior minister when they say that's the reverse. And drill, baby, drill, which he keeps on talking about for the states, and opening up land on federal lands onshore and offshore for more drilling, all of that takes time. Could the U.S. increase production by 2 million barrels a day by the end of the decade? Yes, but not in 2025 or 2026. So they will need our product in the meantime. So I'm more optimistic about the energy side. I think it's a political football. I think Mark Carney, may try to use that, as a lever to get some support for autos and forest products and mining and aluminum and steel. But the bottom line is the Americans are going to be pretty tough on those other areas, because they do have, issues there where our tariffs and non-tariff tariffs are an issue. But the oil side, I think if it becomes a political football, then I think the concern that Western Canada has about the unfairness of a Carney government allowing energy to be used as a football and hurting Western Canada, that could cause significant alienation, and that would make things very difficult for the federal government.
Joseph, what about the LNG terminals that are not only being built, but also planned for Canada? Does any of that change with this new administration?
No, I think it just reinforces that the BC government is going to be very in favor of getting them going. And also the Indigenous people would want them to go, because this way they have, economic freedom. They have more revenues. They have more jobs, more revenues for the provincial government. Everything goes, Rockies LNG, Cedars LNG, LNG Canada Phase 2 or Train 2. All of those, I think, go ahead. But it's the problem of getting new projects going, where the federal government saying, oh, in the old days, it was a 5-year approval process. Now it's a 2-year approval process. And yet, the industry says it should be a 6-month approval process. And that's what the Americans are doing down south. They, Trump has said, we want to approve deals in 6 months. If we can't do it in 6 months, then the regulators are the problem.
Are we actually going to see this happen, though, Joseph? So much of what I've heard is that governments can try to move forward with some of these permitting, but now there are so many different permits that need to happen that there is the potential that work that you should have done for this one permit that you don't need to do anymore simply gets passed on to another agency.
That's where I think the U.S. is doing the right thing. They're putting everything under one regulatory body that has to sign off on everything. And they're taking the power of the decision-making away from the EPA or Interior or whatever. And Canada has to do the same thing. We have, just because the energy industry is such a, political football, but, if Quebec wants to put in a new hydro project, they don't have the same issues, with the lengthy approval process. If, you want to put a new cement plant in Quebec, a new aluminum plant, to me, Western Canada has been sacrificed on the altar of Ontario and Quebec because of the population there. And of course, that's where the Liberal power base is. And the reality is the unfairness of it, I think, is being realized by, by people in Canada. It's, the election was not a win for the growth story of Canada, But the question is Carney going to keep his leftist tendencies, or is he going to realize that the Canada's economy is going down the drain if the trade war with the US continues, and it takes many years for him to find new markets for where the Canadian products that are produced in Eastern Canada. So I think this is an East versus West battle, and I think right now Carney's is going to have to decide, does he want to run with his political his personal views on climate and his left-wing policies, or does he become the prime minister for all of Canada and do what's in the best interest of Canada? On his speech on a Monday night, he threw a few positive bones out, but he also threw a lot of shit out. And I think, which Mark Carney do we get? We still need to wait to find out and see.
Yeah, it's a great point. We're going to have to see what actually gets implemented. There's always a lot of talk. Let's see what the action is. Another element of the energy space we should probably bring in that ties into that, Joseph, is the infrastructure. What about pipelines? Because when you think about something like Alberta, it's always shipped oil down into the U.S. because it's not by water, it's not by a port, it's in the middle of the country. So when you think about the pipeline infrastructure, are there opportunities there? Are there issues there logistically? How do you see the infrastructure element for shipping and piping all of these liquids and fluids?
Well, in terms of within Alberta and within Saskatchewan, that's provincial jurisdiction. When it becomes, intra-provincial, that's when the feds can get involved. So, will there be more natural gas pipelines through BC to the coast, or more expansion of the pipelines that are there? I think that if it's within the control of the local provincial governments, yes. If it requires a major new pipeline that the feds can get involved, I don't think so. There's talk that the TMX could be expanded by another 300,000 barrels a day by the federal government at some enormous, gigantic cost, because like the cost overruns they had, they just didn't know what they're doing. And right now the commentary in the industry is because of the slowdown in drilling, it may take till 2027 before TMX is fully utilized. So that really, to me, is an issue. Is we right now have sufficient capacity to, and we also have capacity going south, but to see a growth in the industry could, because of our significant natural resources, that is the question mark where the federal government can either support us or hinder us. And right now, my concern, and what the concern of the industry is, that there will be hindrance out of Ottawa.
Yeah, a lot of question marks around what's going to happen in the energy sector here, and just so many different factors at play. But some of the key ones also being, is a recession around the corner? And again, what are these governments going to do to either support or push down this sector? Right now, price is not looking great. But Joseph, if you're right, and we see a near-term low around that $55 level, maybe even a little bit higher, and we get a bounce, then these stocks, we all know how much they can come ripping back. But that recent breakdown in price, very interesting, simply from a chart perspective. Again, this has been Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. It's great having you on the show, Joseph, every month. And everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Be sure to go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, and Substack account to keep up to date with all our daily editorials, market commentary, and company updates. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Cortland Economics Report is produced for A.B. Cortland and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Cortland, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Cortland Economics Report.